Let's do this, the Cult of Hockey podcast, by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David.
How you doing, man?
All right. Bit of a sleeper tonight. Well, I mean, I guess exciting overtime, a breakaway winner by Connor McDavid. I mean, that's a nice way to end a game.
Yes, as I've told you, I was out at Bantam evaluation, hockey evaluation. So I didn't come until the third period started. And I was hoping to catch up on the game on NHL.com, like the game center, which I've now purchased. But of course, wasn't on there for some reason. And it wasn't on the internet. So I only caught the third period in the highlights. So I'm going to be a little bit more limited in my commentary tonight. We're going to be doing the usual, the good, the bad, and the numbers of Edmonton 3, Arizona 2. That was the score, wasn't it? So Bruce, I'll start with what I saw as the good. And I was also listening to Bob Stauffer and Jack Michaels talk about the game. And I did see the highlight of the first goal against. They mentioned that as being kind of iffy. But I thought the good was Mikko Koskinen's play. And I've actually liked him the previous game too. And what I like about him is, well, he's very massive, as we all know. But I love his positioning in the net. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like, you know, and again, maybe this was based on reports that this guy was worse than Jonas Gustafsson in terms of his sliding around in the net that you may have made, Bruce. But
I said that after his first game in Calgary, and then I reminisced by his second game in Winnipeg that he'd already gotten much better, even though he had a tough night statistically in Winnipeg. And tonight he let in what looked like a softy early. But then he really settled down and played well. And
from the highlight, I don't see that as a – like, he had a defenseman completely – looked like to me completely screening him, and a Phoenix forward, Arizona forward also screening him. So that was a tougher play than – that was a tough, pretty tough goal. I mean, you get screened like that, they're going to go in now and then. I just love his positioning in that, honestly. He just reminds me of a big Talbot. Maybe he's a quick learner and is learning from Dustin Schwartz. I can see why, based on his size and his positioning in net, why NHL teams were interested in this player. Still early, but I really liked what I saw there. So he's my good thing in this game. What's yours?
Well, that first goal too, you know, I mean, the guy bumped his stick or his pad. One, a sharp, if you look at my Twitter feed, there's a highlight of it. And one of my followers said, picked up on that with his sharp eyes. It squeezed through the five hole because he just got bumped just as the shot arrived. It's just one of those things.
Could it have been goalie interference? It crossed my mind. I mean, I didn't have a high definition highlight to look at, so
very borderline. But I wouldn't have been too worried about it. It just happened, and it might well have been his own defenseman that did the damage.
So yeah, that could have been. What's your good thing?
My good thing is Toby Reeder's first goal as an Oiler. Colby Koch noted that it was only 2,562 days since the Oilers drafted him for him to score his first tally for the Oilers, but it was indeed the game-tying goal on the penalty kill early in the third period. And I don't suppose Toby had a great game. I mean, the shot counts say that his line was chasing the game for much of the night, but he showed some nice bursts of speed, and that's a couple games in a row where we're starting to see his foot speed take have an impact out there. And he seems to have a fair amount of game, like he can do a lot of different things, and killing penalties was supposedly one of those things. When you score on the shorthanded to turn a 2-1 game into a tie game and never trail again, well, you know, that was a huge goal. And good one-timer he got away. He actually passed the puck originally to Strome, and then got into position and hammered the one-timer and managed to beat Antti Raanta, who's a pretty darn good goalie, best goalie we've seen in the preseason so far, I'd say.
So he, the moment he was taken off Draisaitl's line, or maybe Lucic's line, he started to play well last game. Mm-hmm. Don't want to draw any anything too strong connections to Milan Lucic, although I will suggest that Jesse Puljujärvi was saddled with him all year, and that really didn't help Puljujärvi's game at all season long. Reeder has looked good the last couple of games. I mean, we know him as a very fast and effective player. He's in the same class of wingers, Drake Kajula and Pontus Aberg, and he seems to be in it like a higher level of that class of player.
Those guys, yeah.
He does seem to be that, and it's good that he's showing that, and he's a very valuable player for the Oilers in that regard because they can't get that kind of ineffectual wing play from two or three or four wingers like they had last year. It's not going to fly for this team. So they need Reeder. They need two out of the three of Yamamoto, Ratti, and Puljujärvi to step up. They need two of those guys to step up, plus Reeder and Jujhar Khaira, who I think is going to be a strong winger. But yeah, I've liked Reeder. I've liked him when he played another city. So good. It's good. Good news for the Oilers. What was your bad thing, Bruce, this game?
Man. I hate to pick on the guy, but the giveaway Adam Larsson had with like 2 minutes to go in the third period in his own zone when he fired a pass right across his own slot and right onto the tape of an Arizona player. Koskinen came up again and saved Larsson, and Larsson kind of saved himself by sweeping the rebound, sort of falling into the blue paint out of the way. But that was his fourth giveaway of the night. He just has to be better with that puck. Just has to be better. Like, you know, he doesn't have to be great shakes, but you can't just be coughing it up. And tonight, the other night, the scorer never charged him with any giveaways, and I thought he was out. The scorer was out to lunch because I thought Larsson had a tough game with the puck against Vancouver. And tonight he got charged with four, which was the highest on the team. And that, I mean, with 2 minutes left in a tie game, that can be an absolute killer. That turns a point and a half into 0 points if the other guy converts right in a regular season game, because you lose your betting point and your chance to win in overtime potentially on one bad mistake that late in the game.
What I didn't like, Bruce, was the Oilers' power play formation, and I was already crabbing about this probably in a previous podcast, certainly on my blog post today. It makes no sense to me, Bruce, that you would have a top power play unit with five left shots and a second unit with five right shots. I mean, in what universe is that optimizing power play strategy? And I don't know if anyone, maybe you know the research, which would show players on their off wings, power plays with players on their off wings do better. But it just it's what I've seen. It's just so much easier to get off a hard, dangerous shot on your off wing. And the fact, you know, the narrative from Bob Stauffer and others is, oh, well, this is, you know, there's been power plays with all left shots that have worked. Yeah, maybe they had no choice, but the Oilers, they do have a choice here.
Well, when you've got four righties on the second unit, you certainly have a choice. You can at least mix one of them in on the first unit, surely.
Oh, geez. And it's not like Klefbom or Lucic, have to be on that first unit. It's not like they've been killing it. They didn't kill it. They were terrible last year on the first unit.
It's a Nugent's contract, David. You know that no movement clause? It also means I can't move him off the power play. It's signed right in there on clause 6.2A.
Apparently they might lose him. They might lose him, Bruce, if he's not on Draisaitl's line. And so someone said on Twitter, like, so much for veteran leadership these days. Yeah. I hate that argument about Lucic. I don't want to hear that again this year. Like,
he had a good first period, David. I thought Draisaitl had a better game tonight. Good. But I would personally, that first power play unit, I'd be tempted to move Lucic right off of it. Put Draisaitl in the net front role. You want the big man with the good hands in front of the net? Let's try that. And then they got one of those right-handed sticks somewhere, either in the bumper or in the left circle. And, you know, you got two or three choices. It could be Ratti, for goodness sake. I mean, the hot stick that he's got, I'd be damn tempted to put the first line across the middle, Draisaitl in front, and the boomer on the back end, whether it was Klefbom, Bouchard, or whoever.
Do you even need a net front guy? I mean, I know that not all great power plays have the designated net front guy. I mean,
if you have McDavid down out of there, I mean, you don't have to have a guy there 100% of the
time. Like this guy that's this kind of a mobile stationary guy. I mean, it's a fairly typical power play in the NHL, but maybe you move away from that. I don't know, Bruce, but I just think you on that right circle, on that right the left circle where you have the right shot guy. You have Ty Ratty you could put there. You have Jesse Puljujärvi. Put one of them and just quit screwing around, because this is yeah. And the other problem with it is you have Draisaitl and McDavid on the top unit. Well, when the power play is over, wouldn't it be ideal to go back to one or the other? Like if you have them all together and then their wingers are on the second unit, then you can't get the lines together.
Right.
If you have I guess you could go back with Draisaitl and Lucic and Yamamoto, but then Yamamoto was on the second unit. Like, so yeah. they're screwing up their lines as well, mm-hmm. by contorting themselves. I think they're only contorting themselves because of player pecking order on the team.
It's politics. My friend Supernova, who's a great follow on Twitter, by the way, mentioned the other day that there's nowhere in hockey where politics comes more into it than power play ice time. I'm pretty sure he's right, with the possible exception being time on the top line, you know, playing on McDavid's line or what have you. But being on that first power play unit or being on the power play unit is a big chip for players, and some veterans grow to expect that. So, but I think they got to get past that and get into the area where they have something that's clicking and producing. And this five lefty, I mean, maybe they just need a few games to work out the wrinkles, but there are a lot of wrinkles. Man, it looks bad.
Well, if it's politics, and I assume it is, then the coach himself needs to be a better politician, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and carry the majority, or carry whatever it is, convince everybody that we're going to go with a different power play that makes more sense.
Yeah, you blame the Democrats and you move on to.
Yeah. Have at least two right shots on the top unit. How about that? And have at least two left shots on the second unit and go from there. And that's going to work better. I guarantee you it's going to work better. And you can have a net front or not. I think it might be interesting with McDavid down low, kind of running the show from behind the net. Might be an interesting kind of, or Nugent Hopkins down low running it from behind that. I like Draisaitl on the right side with his great left shot, and put Ratty or Puljujärvi over there. Let's, Bruce, what was your number? What's your number tonight that you're
going to? Okay, well, my favorite stat is actually from the last two nights. Just by way of comparison, they always got this guy, number 97, Connor McDavid.
Who?
And yeah, that guy. And on Tuesday night against Vancouver, McDavid didn't so much as attempt a shot. Zero shots, zero misses, zero that were blocked. No shot attempts. All he did was distribute the puck all game. Sure enough, he wound up with three assists. He was plus three. He was in also on, I think he was on the ice for four goals altogether. But he did his damage not directly. Well, tonight that was completely reversed. And, you know, no Oiler except McDavid had more than two shots on net. And tonight McDavid had six. He had eight shot attempts, and he had two goals, zero assists for 2 points, and plus two. So his stat line was sort of opposite from one game to the next. He went from a passer to a shooter, but both games he was a big plus player, and both games he was a crucial performer in helping the win. And that's a big thing. He can beat you in more ways than one, is my takeaway, and the stats actually back that up. It's not just an observation. There are numbers that show exactly that.
And he's got that Bernie Federko haircut going on, man.
Looks good, I think. Looks better than Austin Matthews in that horrible sweater. Oh, my goodness.
Austin Matthews is kind of a... I'm going to say he's a weird-looking person. Of course, he could come right back at me. All right. Should probably leave.
I was chirping his sweater, and I had a Leaf fan chirp me, and he said, telling me I was jealous. And I said, I'm not jealous. I got three sweaters at least that bad in the back of my closet.
Okay, my stat is Darnell Nurse's playing time. Mm. 24 minutes this game. He was easily led the team. Klefbom was at 21:48. And let me just break that down. He had minute 19 shorthanded, 12 seconds on the power play.
And a ton at even strength.
Yeah, just an even strength horse monster, and it just it's I'm I, he's been playing better, and just shows, I think, that in the coach's mind, in McClellan's mind, that Darnell Nurse has moved up the pecking order and is the number one left D-man on this team. And we saw it last year, Bruce. We saw it last year after Clefbaum's game fell apart last year, partly due to injury, and that Nurse took over. Now, he also struggled quite a bit, especially as the season went on, shutting down tough attackers. But I think that it's evident McClellan has a ton of faith in this player, and of course, as one you know, as one of the longtime Darnell boosters in the Oi Logosphere that I am, I also have a lot of faith in Darnell Nurse. And I think if he is used in a kind of a shutdown role, really super tough minutes role this year, he could be extremely valuable to the Oilers, because I think he will step up as a defensive player. And every summer, every year, he works hard on improving his puck moving skills. He's one of the few Oilers defensemen who's constantly moving his feet and getting that puck out of there just by having those feet moving. He's a fabulous skater. So I'm bullish on Darnell Nurse, and so obviously, evidently, so is the coach.
That's exactly what I was going to add. It's just he imposes his skating legs on, if not every game, certainly most games, and he makes a lot of problems go away simply by lugging the puck, getting it out of his own zone and up at least into the neutral zone and in deeper, often just carrying it all the way up. And he spends a fair bit of each game with the puck on the stick.
So between him, Bouchard, and Klefbom, they'll have something of a puck mover on each line. And what I want is for players like Russell and Larson to really take note of Nurse and to start really getting their feet going. I know Russell can, and I think Larson can also skate. So this is what the Oilers need, is they need these guys to just to every time to focus on movement, movement, movement. Get that puck, get going with it, make that pass, but be moving as soon as you get it rather than stationary. And Darnell Nurse is the exemplar of that on the Oilers. Well, Bruce, you're going away, I understand.
Hi, I'm going to Newfoundland. Going home to Newfoundland. My first trip home in 14 years. So I'm getting kind of excited about that. I've lived out in Alberta since 1971, the year that the Oilers were announced. Gary Davidson, Bill Hunter, and WHA. So I arrived in Edmonton as a teenage hockey fan at just the right time for, first of all, the WHA, then the Coliseum, then Gretzky, then the NHL, all in the 70s. I mean, if you'd have told me when I arrived that we'd have an NHL team with the best player in the league before the decade was out, I would have said that's like landing man on the moon before the decade is out. It's just not possible, but that's how it worked. But anyway, originally I went to Howie Meeker's hockey school back in the day. I was a goalie, not a good one, way back in the day. But I've only been home only about once a decade for the last number of years. So I'm really, really excited about that, going home for our hockey draft, our 40th annual hockey draft. Started with five of us out here in Edmonton, including a friend of mine from Newfoundland who moved back there a few years later. And he's flown out here every October to participate in our draft for the last at least 25 years. I can't remember exactly when he moved back, at least 25 years. He's never missed one. Flown out here every year. So for our 40th, Fred offered to host it. And what are we going to say? No, I'm certainly not. I got a chance to go home. So I'm going to be a little bit out of the loop. I might write a post while I'm down there, but our draft is the same day as the first game in Gothenburg. And I hope to be able to watch that game right after our draft. And then I'll be back in Edmonton just in time for game two. The Oilers have a bit of a wide open spaces in their schedule because they're traveling so much.
All righty. Well, have a great trip. I'm going to miss you on the podcast. Maybe I'll recruit Kurt to come and help me out, but
Right on.
Have a great time in Newfoundland. Anyway, everyone, thanks.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And hopefully we'll see you in 10 or so days.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.